This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Break your face.
Yes, they beat me. Beating this normally. Every day they can beat you and they can using the force team to come inside your room and beat you and search you. And many times they took my head and beat me by the ground until the blood coming. Many, many times this, not one times. It's normal, these things, for them to do it there.
The questions they asked you about Al Jazeera, they asked you about, was there a link? Who was the link with Al Qaeda?
Yes.
What else? Did they ask you about the heads of the organization?
Yes, they asked me about the people who are working at Jazeera here, their background of them, and who paid Jazeera money, and who helped Jazeera, and what's the purpose of Jazeera, why they Jazeera sent people to war place.
Al Jazeera journalist Sami Alhaj held for 6 years at Guantanamo without charge. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, hosted by Joe Uris. Today's topic will be the circus of official politics.
KBOO Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater presents a monthly film series on the second Thursday of each month. January 10th at 7 p.m., we present the 1988 film Talk Radio, in which a rude, contemptuous talk show host becomes overwhelmed by the hatred that surrounds his program just before it goes national.
Open your mouth and tell me what we're going to do about the mess this country's in. Talk radio. It's the last neighborhood in town. People just don't talk to each other anymore. Let's go to the first caller. Night Talk.
Before the film, we'll hear Carl Wolfson, who will talk about his experience as a talk show host in Portland. And the film will be introduced by a KBOO board member and Wednesday morning talk show host, Lisa Loving. That's January 10th at the Clinton Street Theater at 7 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/kboofilms.
KBOO is a proud media sponsor of the Fertile Ground Festival of New Works, presented by the Portland Area Theater Alliance from January 24th through February 3rd. Fertile Ground features 88 events with over 50 artists and companies, including Artist Repertory Theater, Portland Playhouse, and Polaris Dance, and dozens more. For a 10-day festival pass or ticket info, visit fertilegroundpdx.org or go to kboo.fm.
It's been snowing in Afghanistan, and three-year-old Janan died last Friday night, the first to freeze to death this winter in Kabul's ragtag refugee camps. The United States spends $10 billion a month on the Afghan war, a war that Professor Zahir Wahab calls a failure on all fronts. Will we ever leave? What will we leave behind? Join me, Linda Olson-Osterlin, for a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Dr. Zahir Wahab, back from his work with teacher training in Afghanistan. Tune in to hear his unique and important perspective on Afghanistan 11 years into the war. That's this Thursday morning on a deeper look at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, yes, yes. Step right up. This is your chance, your only chance, perhaps the only chance in all the universe to understand and realize the incredible opportunities that are presented by American advancement all over the world. Yes, yes, yes. Don't look over there. Don't look over here. Just look right down the line there. This is the nation that does the job. This is the nation that is the nation of the world. This is the grand scheme in its writ large manner. You don't need to think. You don't need to worry. You don't need to consider anything except everything we are told by the government and the large manufacturers and everybody in the incredible energy industry. No, no. Have no doubts. Have no fears. America's here. Yes, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland. And this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Abe ain't here, so it's just me, Joe. If you want to talk to us, it's 231-8187. This is me returning after the big Christmas break. Christmas, you know, that's the holiday where you buy lots of stuff, get into debt, and worry. But your children have so much fun with their electronic toys that they never use their legs or arms much. It's good. It's all good. Relax. Sit back. Enjoy the show. Okay, I've become even more cynical and despair-filled. So, and Catholics say that that's the sin of despair. So you're going to help me. What you're going to do for me today, if you want to, is to tell me some good things that are happening, as well as, you know, the usual, oh my God, could they really be doing that stuff? I have no idea how many people listen to the show. Could be 12, could be 12,000, you know, I just don't know. I just don't know. I do know that in general, KBOO Talk Radio is sort of popular, but we don't really know what goes on here. My own background, those of you just tuning in, I did commercial talk radio for a station called KGW, which folded for a variety of reasons back way back in the 90s and during the first Gulf War. And I have developed a certain sense of the direction of American society. I have taught sociology and history at the universities and the community colleges. I have put on plays. I have performed in audience situations. I know all kind of thing. But the one thing I don't know for sure is who the heck you are and what your thinking is. And this is a big show under the big top to try to present the variety of absurdities that are designed, I think, fundamentally to distract us all from the grim reality of an advancing, absolutely, I would call it, inexorable imperial agenda. So let's talk. Let's talk about all the things that are happening. You just had a government, you know, a new government, as it were, installed. Drones are now normative. The official, unofficial foreign policy of the United States in fighting something called terrorism is to use drones. Drones are, of course, targeting civilians as well as people who are believed to be, not necessarily are, terrorists of one sort or another. And each drone strike probably creates a few more people who would like to see the U.S. come to great harm. So it's an interesting and self-fulfilling prophecy that the more we fight terror, the more the terror fights us. That's that. Then, of course, just so you didn't know it, because I'm afraid it wasn't well publicized, the government essentially has 5 more years of warrantless wiretaps and invasions of our privacy at home and abroad based on, you know, kind of hunches by people who are kind of hunchy-filled, paranoid operatives of the state. And all of this taking place in the context of a looming environmental disaster, shall we call it, or disasters, plural, all of this taking place in a situation in which we're sucking oil out of the ground while we're poisoning the groundwater itself, in which we are going to build massive pipelines to move nasty oil from nasty places to nasty other places to feed a vast empire of money, which will in turn produce plastic goods for the United States and pollution in the air at home. This is all happening. We're all comfortable with it. But here's the thing. The big circus, the one we know about, is the Democrats and the Republicans as they fight for control of the House of Representatives and the Senate in a contest in which not only are there no winners, but there aren't even any losers. Think about it. It's a strange, strange Alice in Wonderland world. Right now, all of us will be fighting, supporting a conservative Republican for Secretary of State, because that's a quote-unquote rational choice, against the insanity of a Republican Party which has descended into an ultimate reactionary think tank, a force of evil. The ideas of Cheney and the Bush administration and all of that survive and persist and even flourish under the leadership of the conservative president, Barack Obama, who amazingly, on the part of the right, is described as a socialist or a communist or something bad on account of how he's got a funny name and he has a dark skin and all that stuff. In a culture that regards a person of darker skin by the ethnic background they have. Thus, for example, Barack Obama is a black man. Now, the fact that he's European as well as African in ancestry is really not important, because the signifier, the element that matters to Americans and, in fact, to the media and, in fact, to most of us, is the fact that he has a half of his genetic material coming from African roots. Now, never mind the fact that we all come from African roots. We are is so comfortably embedded, even on the liberal side, in our racism, that we don't consider the implications of that whole process of making Obama the other. All of this is going on constantly, endlessly, in a media environment that does the most sleazy and insufficient job of reporting the news. So what is to be done, as a famous communist once said? And I don't know. How is it best? What is makes the most sense to attack, or at least to turn, the great tide of American imperialism? Or is it over? Should we all just play with our toys and leap into the sea of joy that is implicit in sex, drugs, and rock and roll? I want to know what you think. I want to know where your head's at in all of this. I returned to the radio after a couple of weeks gone, and I'm looking around in a dazed and confused way, thinking, why am I doing this? You know, who am I speaking to? What is the purpose in the end of this? Should I be an advocate for organized labor, which is suffering constantly under the barrage of attack, which goes way back to pre-World War II times? Should I pre-World War I times, for that matter? Should I focus my attention on environmental issues? My goodness, we about to have coal trains rushing through our lands. Should I put energy into fighting that enormous effort? Should I just kind of get absurd and become concerned about, I don't know, legalizing marijuana? That's a really important one. Oh, man, it's so cool. And it's much more powerful than it used to be. You know, really, what should we be doing? What is to be done? I really want to hear from you. 231-8187. And in lack of your own response right now, I want to make sure you know some stuff. First of all, my perspective on Barack Obama is that he's a decent enough fellow with a terribly strong ambition who came to power in the right time, in the right way, which is to say in a conservative way. He is, in fact, a conservative. He is, in fact, not particularly concerned over civil liberties and civil rights. He is, in fact, as I said earlier, a conservative. In any other time in history, we would identify him as such. But in this time, because the right has moved so far into a realm of fascist fiction, he is perceived as a liberal, if not a leftist. So here you got this guy, decent enough fellow, essentially passing through and allowing incredible destruction of civil liberties and civil rights, all under the guise of this terrible fear of a terrible menace that is terribly unclear out there somewhere, most of which we can reasonably say was created by us. And on top of all of that, there's this onrushing desire by vast wealth and vast energy industries to make the world theirs absolutely and forever. So, you know, here we are. Here we are. We sit and talk. We are a minority. We grouse. We are concerned. We develop even our own conspiracy theories about all of it. By the way, is for me very interesting that we develop enormous and elaborate conspiracy theories to explain what is already obvious and simple and direct. So, it's time for me to say, as we say in talk radio, we want to hear from you. 231-8187. What is to be done? George, you're on the air.
Long live the Ku Klux Klan.
Okay. See, that's it. There it is. Imagine somebody going to the trouble of getting on the radio and waiting while I rap to get the chance to say long live the Ku Klux Klan. Hey, you know, this is America. It's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place. And it is also a land of total irrelevance. I think Legos are the solution to most of our problems. Look, here's a device that children can play with that interlock lovelily, that have many colors, that is made out of petroleum, essentially. And you can buy them fairly cheaply, and they're made in China or someplace like that. Well, why worry? Never mind the wooden blocks, which are destructive to the environment. Let's go with the plastic, which is destructive to the environment. So, we got people calling us. So who do we got? Stacy. Hi, Stace.
Hi, how are you?
I'm cynical and nasty.
Well, it's hard not to be that way these days, but I just had to say that I was listening to NPR just a few minutes ago before I found KBOO.
Okay.
And they had a story about how the price of natural gas is going down.
Yes, it is.
All these other factors, because of fracking and because of all these things. And this was NPR. I expected a little bit of balance in the story, and they ended it there.
Oh.
The price is going down. They didn't talk about the problems with fracking. They didn't talk about the environmental factors. They didn't talk about anything. Just, hallelujah, the price is going down. And I was so appalled by that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'll ever listen to NPR again.
Well, I think here's a problem. If we don't listen to as much of the media as we can stand, we end up without the knowledge to begin to struggle on issues. On the other hand, if we immerse ourselves in it, we end up getting so angry, so turned off, so depressed, that we are unable to fight as well. It is a very, very difficult environment in which to function as an upright, serious citizen of the world. But, you know, I don't think you should not listen to NPR, but I do think you should go online or call them and give them some, you know, SHI, whatever.
Well, I definitely will do that. And, you know, I do, I do try and look at as many outlets as possible to try and get an informed and balanced view of things. But I have to say, it is increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who is very conservative. And he also was complaining that it is very difficult to find legitimate sources of information that you can trust.
Mm. It is a problem. One of the paradoxes of our time is that there's an enormous amount of information available. on the web and elsewhere. And it to sort through that, to cut through the static, the fuzz of it, becomes increasingly difficult. So there's an irony in having a lot of information. The other problem, of course, is that there is an American point of view, which is embedded in NPR, which is embedded in ABC, CBS, and so on. I try to listen to Amy Goodman here on KABU, or you can also get it on Link TV and other sources if you have cable. I also like to listen, not too much, but occasionally, to MSNBC and watch their shows. And I think it is possible to pull from all of that a better picture of things. In addition, there are a lot of good documentaries and a lot of good arguments being made in a variety of sources. But can one spend one's life listening to, becoming essentially a media junkie in the search for what the heck's going on? You know?
And I think that's part of the problem. And I think that's why a lot of people are tuning out. I have six children myself, and half of them stay pretty politically informed, and the other half say, I don't have time, and I don't understand the issues, and it just frustrates me. And, you know, I'm a child of the age where we believed in civic involvement, mm-hmm. whether things were going on that we liked or not, that you can't just sit back and say, well, it's not my responsibility, because it is. And so it's really hard for me to see people around me check out. On the other hand, I certainly understand their frustration.
Well, the frustration is very, very great, and we're living in difficult economic times, so people really have to hustle and hassle. But, you know, I believe that it is not an accident that we are bombarded with misinformation and incomplete stories and unfinished business over and over again. I really do believe that is the, without a conspiracy, and this is important, without a conspiracy, there is a tacit cultural understanding within the media community that does not embrace fact, but rather embraces kind of national cultural mythos. And this is not a new thing. This is something that has existed for a long, long time. What's really new is that we now have access to vast amounts of material, and you actually have to consciously block out facts to present the official line.
True. I'd have to agree. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the call. And keep listening and keep arguing and keep writing letters, keep doing the email, keep talking to your kids about what about their kids, you know? Make sure that people understand that this is a dangerous time. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Good luck. Okay, well, I'm not ready to get cheered up yet. I don't know. You know, I got a terrible argument with very good friend of mine last night about, well, why the hell do I do this? I don't get paid. The measure of everything in America is money. I'm not getting paid. Now, of course, it doesn't cost me anything. Well, the gasoline to get here, I don't bicycle. Oh, I don't bicycle. I'm so bad. The cost of getting here, the cost of, you know, getting around, paying attention. I don't put enough energy into this show. I suppose I ought to be looking for guests who would authenticate what I say, essentially, by being a different set of voices. Well, on the other hand, if we don't do what we do, however limited it is, then we have really, really abdicated our responsibility as citizens. So I guess for a while I'll keep on. But, you know, you, all of you listening, make it more interesting for me and for everybody by your participation, by your example. The small acts, the protest, the letter, the phone call, the email, all those things on as many issues as you can stand to deal with in a given amount of time, I can't say they're going to make a difference. I'm going to say they can make a difference. And I've said this before. You never know. You never know the point when the system breaks and a new system begins to appear. It's impossible to tell. It's very bizarre to think about. And by the way, I wanted to mention one thing, which is the excellent series I'll skip that. I'll come to that another time because we got a bunch of callers. Let's go to our next caller, 231-8187. Markel? Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Your little mention between this comment and the last really leads into my comment, which is about doing what we do. There is so much to be done to change the world. And the world, I mean, this sounds cheesy, and we've all heard it on bumper stickers and everything, but the change happens within us, and it happens with what we can touch. And for a lot of us, that means going inside and asking, what do I want to touch that I can see? And maybe that means volunteering or making some shifts that I like to say are counter-rational, because they haven't been the most financially rational shifts for me, but in terms of life purpose,
mm-hmm.
effect, happiness, and ultimate sustainability and generative ability on my part, it's been like a magnificent shift to actually function from my heart, doing what I want, getting active in the community where I'm inspired, because then I literally become this bubble of positive energy, and I have more capacity to stay engaged with what's happening in the world, because being enraged and trying to break down systems that aren't functioning are keeping the system functioning, because we're just spinning our wheels. And it's a very different story to actually be centered and approach things with a responsibility versus a reaction, and intentionally making those changes, whether it's where we are spending our money. I mean, this is a huge place where we can make a difference, people.
Mm-hmm.
Research where the things you are buying come from, and make that your form of protest. If that is the only form of protest, it's a pretty significant one.
No, I think you're making a really good point, and I'm really glad you called with that. There are a lot of ways to live a more virtuous life. And one of the ways is to consciously use your money power appropriately, and also to consciously spend, I don't know, a small part at least of your time engaged in the discourse, in the politics of the society. And as I said a little bit ago, we won't know until things break, until things suddenly change. We won't know whether we're having any effect or not. So I really I really appreciate your call, and I think your idea or ideas are right. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now, you know, I don't want to spoil my cynical mood here by having people call me and tell me how it's worth struggling and how it's... yeah, I do. Come on, give me some calls cheering me up. I need an anti-winter blues hit. And you could be the one. Now, who do we got? Becky. Hi, Beck. Is it okay to call you Beck?
Sure.
Okay. Hi, Beck. I like that.
I have one friend who calls me that. I wanted to say that your show this morning has really struck a chord with me. I mean, it started out with what you were saying about Obama and the security state and stuff. And I think what, and the way you led up into kind of the question of what you should be doing,
mm-hmm.
Is something that I struggle with recently myself, of like trying to think of what my next path in life will be, and having all these choices of what would make a difference and what makes sense. And for you personally, it sounds, what came to my mind was that just being able to tell the truth about all the big lies that are being told is a really important function that you have here on KBOO and, you know, in the rest of your life. Because there's not that many people willing to put in the time to face the kind of wall of BS that we're faced with. And mm-hmm. so you have some credibility, because the way you mentioned not getting into conspiracy theories, there's gotten, part of our media culture has been that anyone who is talking about something that's not mainstream is marginalized. And
so
we need to elevate the voices of reason and truth, and mm-hmm. I think that's something that you do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Give me more. Oh, God. No, I do appreciate it. I think putting perspective to it all is to realize, essentially, whether or not it really makes a difference. As I said earlier, you can't tell until it does. And doing the right thing, a Spike Lee quote, is not a bad idea in any event. Virtue really does have its own reward, and being able to say to your children, to your relatives, to your family, hey, you know, I'm doing this. I've decided, for example, I've decided to spend some time with Meals on Wheels. Good program. I've decided to help out with a political activity or set of political activities. I'm going to fight fracking. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. In the end, you come away from those experiences with the sense that humanity has a future. If you don't, you move into a kind of grouchiness that is, you start, it's like you start chewing your fingers off. You know what I mean?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad. I guess I feel grateful to be able to do this. I'm grateful for KBOO to exist at all in this environment. But also I feel like we on the left, and I identify myself with the left, have a real obligation to cut through, to kind of pull apart and parse the hyper-conspiracies with the real and very, very dangerous activities that are going on the part of the government, to make a real appraisal. For example, I end up voting for, because I don't feel that there's much choice, I end up voting for Obama, the decent guy. And I know he ain't much, but I know that the other choice was so weird and creepy that I couldn't not vote. You see what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I think that's what we're all forced to do in the sphere of elective politics. By the way, in Oregon, Jeff Merkley is turning out to be a great senator that we never paid any attention to, I don't think, in his getting elected. And he's fighting the good fight on a number of levels. So there are, in fact, voices at the near top who are struggling to make things better. So I guess I'll have to kind of step back from the edge of despair and think about what all it is to do that can make a difference and keep, in my little teeny way, and it is teeny, do this show because what the hell? You follow?
Yep.
So I'm glad you called. I'm glad that's been three calls. And is this a coincidence, or are women more willing to step forward with hope?
Well, you can study that and see what you think.
I have no idea, and I doubt that there's science that would support it either way. But anyway, I'm really glad you called, and thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. I have to right quickly do the business that makes the station survive. I got to tell you what's up. At 9 on Alternative Radio, activist, journalist, and author Bill McGibbon, who's a good guy. See, there's a good guy. Bill McGibbon speaks on the climate cliff, which we are on at the edge of. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, which is always headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a report on U.S. meddling in Syria. Oh, do not let me commence on the horror of Syria and President Obama's grants the National Security Agency 5 more years to carry out warrantless wiretapping. Oh, Constitution, where art thou? At 11 on Stage and Studio, guest host S.W. Konser interviews Portland artist Tad Savinor. I know Tad. Co-authored the play Talk Radio. KBOO is screening the film Talk Radio this Thursday night at the Clinton Street Theater. At 11:30 on Air Focus, Joseph Galliban interviews photographer Christopher Rauschenberg about Museum, his show of recent photographs at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. Thanks, KBOO. Thanks, members, for your ongoing support. If you're not a member, I hope you can hear that. Shame, shame, shame. You can become one by going to the KBOFM site and clicking on the Donate Today tip jar and giving us some money. Because you know what? look as hard as you will, you'll never find a corporate sponsor for KBOO. It's up to you. All right, 231-8187. My story today, my tale is, what is to be done? Should I have despair and leap on a sharp pole, or Should we keep the struggle going? And what do you think? And what are you doing? And here's Chris. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Pretty good.
Yeah, well, pretty good's better than the way you started.
Okay, I'm cheering up. You see?
Yeah, you are. Well, I just want to say, you know, I was raised with the notion that you should always do what you love, and the money will follow. And I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, it's impossible to say.
Yeah, but I will say that it gave me a certain amount of room to really focus on what I loved and what I wanted and what I was good at, as opposed to what would make me the most money in terms of, you know, my pursuits and how I would spend my time and what I would go after in terms of my education. And what that's done for me is, you know, at this point, I have a huge passion for hip-hop culture, history, not just the music and certainly not what's on the radio, which goes back into that whole corporate media thing, but with, you know, the genuine evolution of this new culture out of the burned-out Bronx of the 1960s and 70s, and just that whole phenomenon of something coming out of, you know, ashes and poverty, and... you know, but then I also have to make money. And so, you know, I started looking at what I could do, and I ended up going into education. And the more that I read about and study, you know, what it is to teach and what it is to be an educator, the more I realize how fundamentally important it is. And as Becky just said, you know, what you do by speaking the truth and by tearing down that quote the wall of BS, as she put it, you know, that is one of the most critical pursuits that I think anybody can undertake, is just to tell the truth. And education obviously presents that opportunity on a daily basis. And so then to bring those two things together, what I'm realizing now is that once I get my own classroom, that I can bring in my passion for hip-hop culture and history and art and making things yourself and creating something out of nothing. And I can bring that into the classroom alongside the truth-telling and connect with the whole new generation to continue in the struggle in their own way and to recreate the struggle in using their own skills and passions and interests. Well, and so... Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, so, you know, I think that's really what it has to be about, is each of us figuring out what it is that we love and what it is that we want to see, and start working toward that in any and every way. And it might not end up the way that we think, but, you know, I don't feel that we have any other choice. And that, so that's what gives me hope.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I wanted to add, you know, when you teach young people, I don't know what age level you're going to be entering into teaching, but when you teach young people at whatever age, and you tell them what's important within the culture they are growing up in, you know, extracting from that the positive and showing them how it can be empowering, you really are validating their lives at the same time that you're infusing them with a desire to make things better. So that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it wasn't how I planned it, but it's turned out to be exactly what I think I'm supposed to be doing with my time and my energy here on this planet. And I think if more people, you know, just said, you know what, I'm going to do what I want to do, and then I'll figure out the rest later. Mm-hmm. I think we would all end up with, you know, a much better planet to live on.
Well, I think you're right, and I really appreciate your call.
All right. Hey, thanks, Joe. Hey. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. You know, years ago when I was a naive Ute, so many years ago that we best not visit it, I was very influenced by, actually, I've mentioned this before, but it's important, by people like Dorothy Day of the Catholic Worker Movement. Now, I'm not Catholic, and I don't believe in any of the aspects of the Catholic faith, but I was very impressed by the Catholic anarchist movement in New York, in the work they were doing to help poor people, and the work they were doing on the international and national stage. At the same time, I was very influenced by the Quakers in their political activity. And I like the idea, which is really a good one, that one has an obligation to speak truth to power. That if enough people speak truth to power, and that of course implies that people can find the truth, which is a very challenging question, but if enough people can find truth and if enough people speak up, even in this peculiar quasi-democracy, change is possible. In fact, with enough force and enough energy and enough reality, such as the reality of the onrushing climate disaster, change will become actually inevitable. And guiding that change toward progressive and positive humanist values is really worth doing, if only because at the end of the day, you feel good. Anyway, let's hear from you. 231-8187. Jack.
Right. Congratulations to Chris that he's found a meaningful path in his life, one that reaches to the historic roots of the educator artist.
Mm-hmm.
reaches back all the way back to the origins of Western civilization.
Yeah.
After all, what would we know? What would we know of the Trojan Wars without Homer? Without Homer to
blind guide to boot.
Yeah, to teach us to carry the stories around the so-called civilized world, and teach everybody about the horrors of war.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the epiphanies of Ulysses as he's taken to the underground and hears all the fallen yet not dead warriors talking to him. Moreover, as we see the all of the gods are conspiring to make such a world as it is, it makes one wonder what is the origin of conspiracy theories.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean is so much going on that you can't really see, you can't really control, you don't really know.
Oh, I mean, see what you mean. Yeah, no,
and so
it is confusing.
Yeah, and so what is what is a conspiracy that should be paid attention to and not? For example, disaster capitalism is absolutely a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Right.
And I believe that's true, by the way.
Right. I believe it is, too. And voter suppression, as in Greg Palast's thesis.
Mm-hmm.
Right. However, I know you dismiss flat out the 9/11 coup d'etat as an unsupportable conspiracy.
Well, yeah, not that it isn't possible, but that it's not really supportable by the evidence that we have at this point.
Right. So, it's a question of how much evidence are you going to accept and
right.
What are you going to
read? And also how useful. Here's another thing to think about. Things that may or may not be true in the world may or may not be useful to put together to react to in a positive political way. If we develop a theoretical model that essentially says all the cards are in the hands of the guys who run things, and nothing, everything is not what it seems, and we are mere pawns in a vast and incredible game, then we end up feeling helpless and paranoid rather than being willing to engage in struggle. That's always a concern of mine.
Yeah, well, and of course, unless we are lucky enough to have a Toto who will grasp the apron of the curtain and pull it back.
You want a little dog to take care of things?
Well, you never know. You never know where you're going to find that little bit of. That little opening that's
mm-hmm.
going to reveal. And, that's just mm-hmm. the way it was chosen in that narrative
right.
to do it.
Well, coming back to, I as you know, I'm really apprehensive and get upset with the conspiracies of 9/11. But there is one part of it that is definitely has a conspiratorial aspect. That is that the government of the Bush administration chose, I think, to totally ignore every sign of the impending attack. We know that. There's no question about that. Now, the detail stuff, the what happened to Building 7, the blah, 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 I that stuff I don't buy. But it doesn't really matter anymore. What really matters is that we understand that our government did not choose to do everything it could to prevent that attack. And in fact, had a view, even putting aside conspiracy questions, had a view of the potential of our enemies that was so limited and so racist and so, you know, culturally biased that we didn't get it. And the best interpretation you can come up with is they were stupid. The other interpretation is they thought it was very useful. So there we are with that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other plausible line, of course, is that a faction within was able to use the mechanisms available to them to pull it off, and to and if you talk about people being incompetent and not seeing this or not seeing that, there's of course and excuse me if I diverge here, but if you recall, in the last 12 years or so, I know it only went 8 seasons, there was this much, much maligned TV show called 24. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember 24.
Yeah, very much maligned because of the torture and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Okay? But if one were to look at that show, and I have to admit, guilty pleasure, full disclosure, I became somewhat addicted to it. But
we have a program for that.
I'm sure there's a social engineering program for everything these days. But at the heart of each of those episodes was the fact that the conspiracy always led back to some rogue network inside, and it couldn't happen, it couldn't proceed without well-placed moles.
Hmm. I don't want to get...
You're going to cut me off here, I know you are.
But beyond that...
Let me just say this. You can choose your conspiracies based on your lights, mm-hmm. and everybody's, of course, free to do that in a free society. Remember what Noam Chomsky said. Calling someone a conspiracy theorist is simply a way to marginalize them.
No, I agree, and that's always a problem. The reason why I tend to want to veer away from that stuff, there's two reasons. First is it's really not knowable. I mean, we really don't, it's really, you can't grab stuff like that. Second of all, I like to use something called Occam's Razor, right?
Right.
What's the most probable thing? The most probable thing is not that there were explosives planted on each floor of the building and so on. The most probable thing is that they happened to hit a building that was poorly built by venture capitalists and that was poorly designed to, you know, if they'd hit, for example, the Empire State Building, which was in fact hit by a bomber during World War II, you know, crashed into it, it wouldn't have gone down the way it did. I say that this was a peculiar combination of cheap capitalism and a very successful, dedicated craziness. But
of course, you have every right to that opinion too.
Okay.
And if you want, and Occam's Razor could also support what is widely held by some, that the most absurd conspiracy theory of all is that a ragtag band of 19 so-called terrorists, mm-hmm. using box cutters directed by a dialysis cripple off from a laptop in a cave in the Hindu Kush, defeated the most advanced, well-funded military defense system in the world.
Well, that's, you know, good point, but I would point out that a bunch of ragtag... ragtag opportunists, small-time capitalists, and slave-holding farmers defeated the largest empire in the world in 1700s.
With a lot of help from the French.
With a lot of help from the French. Good point. Anyway, I'm going to move on.
We'll end there.
Okay, I appreciate the call, man. All right, 231-8187. I don't want to spend time on conspiracy theories, just because I don't want to spend time on conspiracy theories. I do want you all to call me, and I do want to hear from you about your ideas. I started this show, if you're just tuning in, by saying, that's my intellectual analysis of what's going on. you know, we just made it okay. The Obama administration just allowed another 5 years of warrantless wiretapping, domestic wiretapping as well as foreign. We see countless examples of absolutely unconstitutional behavior. We have a Supreme Court that is absolutely rogue in its majority. We have a Congress that is insanely dysfunctional on a trip that is incomprehensibly traitorous. And all of that taking place in the context of a very advanced form of capitalism that is literally eating the center out of our soul. All right, 231-8187. Karen, you're on the air.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
You're in rare form today. That's great.
Am I?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that KBOO is really a light in my life.
So, oh, good. Good.
Yes. And
because
you know,
we sure ain't making a lot of money.
Well, you know, I don't think that's the point, actually.
No, it certainly is not.
And, you know, one of your earlier callers was talking about NPR, and you know, I'm somewhat disillusioned with NPR also, and I'm pretty selective.
Well, it slid to the right somehow. I don't know.
Oh, unquestionably. And so I usually just listen to NPR, like, on the weekends. And, you know, there's some nice weekend shows, the Car Talk and that kind of stuff.
Car Talk's gone.
It's a lot of fun. But cable is
No, it's gone. Car Talk's gone.
They
retired. They went away.
Yeah, they're doing reruns, which, you know,
right.
it's
well, fun. It doesn't matter with reruns on car repair. What can you say?
No, cars are still there.
I have a Studebaker, and I, you know.
Oh, that was my family's first car.
Yeah. Well, let's not get too nostalgic, but I did actually have one.
But I wanted to share with you a movie I just watched called I Am. And it was just really a good movie. And, you know, one of the messages with that is that I am part of the problem and I am part of the solution.
I don't know this movie.
It's really, I highly recommend it. It got it on Netflix, so it's fairly recent.
Uh-huh.
But he interviews a lot of people, you know, Howard Zinn when he was still alive. And, obviously when he was still alive. And then
we hope, obviously. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Voices
from the grave and all that.
I know. He does still speak from the grave, I guess, in certain ways, but he's a wonderful, amazing person.
Mm-hmm.
And he quotes, in the movie, they quote the Dalai Lama. And he said, you know, because we all feel this way, just overwhelmed. And his advice was use critical thinking, analyze what's going on, analyze the problem, and then find the one thing that you are passionate about. And do that. Just do that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, what I did was I took that year to really educate myself and find out about the issues and try to learn about the issues and all that. And this year, I just called Ani. I want to do some volunteering.
Great. Facebook. Good for you.
And I want to spend more time writing and engaging others, because if I just talk to the same people that I know that agree with me every day, that's not my one thing. That's not a good enough one thing. I need to reach out and do it.
No, absolutely. In fact, you know, one of the things that has to happen more and is not, is more and more people have to reach out. And in fact, they even have to get into the streets. I think we really have to make it hard to make business as usual go ahead and force, you know, really force the ambitious media locals and so on to confront issues. And unfortunately, one of the few ways we have to do that is to go into the street.
Well, yeah, it's true. And, you know, as an older person, I'm not as anxious to do that as I was. You know, I was out there with the civil rights and Vietnam War and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So my one thing is going to be actually more doing writing and not just on the sites that I'm comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
but on the sites and with the people that I'm uncomfortable with.
No, that's really a good idea. And I think, by the way, I didn't mean to diss at all using the internet and other sources with your own writing and pulling up sources that support your positions. I think it's really important. I think being quiet, being silent, letting your moodiness, in my case, my moodiness, overcome my willingness to fight in the good sense, is a self-defeating sin.
Oh, yeah.
If sin is an okay thing to say.
Is that we are social animals. Mm-hmm. We share, so much with other animals and with one another. And when our heart beats in, excitement or whatever our emotion, other people pick up on that. So being out in the streets or with your neighbors or in a meeting or whatever, that is a level of involvement and excitement that makes us stronger.
No, you're absolutely right. And I want to add one thing to what you're saying, and I absolutely agree with you. One thing that's really important is that we, all of us, have to keep in mind actual history. We tend to forget when things recycle with the same bull, We tend to forget the lies have been propagated and overlaid with more lies, and we need to cut through all that and insist on reality. And that's really, really a hard thing to do, but very important.
Yeah. Well, that's the critical thinking.
Yeah.
And, those are very specific analytical type of skills that will guide us, I think, to explore, why is somebody saying this? What are our assumptions?
Mm-hmm.
What's that point of view? How is it different? All those kinds of things.
Exactly. And the old, I can't remember the Latin, but basically, who benefits? What's up?
Yeah.
That's
right. Follow the money.
Always follow the money.
Oh, well, thank you for your show. I sincerely mean that, and I'm looking forward to whatever volunteer I can do at the station.
Yeah, that's great. I'm very glad you're doing that. And do what's, God, I really am sounding like Spike Lee here. Do the right thing. Okay.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Take care. All right. Okay, it's KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. It's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. And I'm talking without Abe here about kind of what is to be done and how do we deal with our own knowledge of the horrible difficulties, the horrible challenges that await us with the onrushing environmental disasters, the incredible story of monopoly and disaster capitalism that dominates our culture, our warrior framework for solving every problem in the world, our meddling and messing with things, which has gone on forever and ever. So let's hear from you, 231-8187. Michael, you're on the air.
Whoops, sorry.
What?
Now I'm on the air.
Okay, hi.
Hi. So, I've watched the left for many, many years. I used to be a member of the left. I was a hippie.
You were a hippie?
Absolutely.
I can't imagine you as a hippie.
Well, if you want to send me email, I'll send you a URL and you can look at a picture of it.
I don't think I can handle it.
Well, maybe you can't. Anyways, so I was a hippie. I was on the left. I was into the whole, the way the world was going to change, consciousness change, when the mode of the music changes, the walls of the city shake, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Yeah. What went wrong?
What went wrong? So here it is, 1973 or 1974, and I'm into it. I'm really into it, and I'm doing it, and my friends are doing it. And all of a sudden, the guy that we used to buy certain illegal things from, mm-hmm. one of our buddies, and that was the business he was in,
mm-hmm.
he shows up, and he's wearing like a white polyester suit and a white hat with a big wide brim.
Oh, my God.
And now he's selling, instead of the green stuff, the white stuff.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, I see like 90% of my hippie brothers in arms are suddenly doing the Broadway hustle and a different kind of drugs. And I realize that, I thought I was part of a movement, and instead, there was a bunch of trend victims following me.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, or, maybe they weren't following me. I wasn't like a leader that much. But, I was in a group that was all moving in a certain direction. All of a sudden, 90% of them are off doing the Broadway hustle instead. And, it seems to me like the rest of the left, or the left that is left, didn't learn that lesson. Didn't realize.
I'm not quite following you here.
Well,
because people were snorting coke.
Because the world went from hippie, sex, love, dope, change the world, the new consciousness. All of a sudden, they got bored with that and they went to disco instead.
Well, don't you think that there's a serious role of a commodity culture in all of that?
Well, but there are some people who aren't victims of that, and we thought there were a lot more of them than there actually are. And then, and I see in another thing, the left just doesn't learn from history, from its own history. Like you had the Occupy movement last year. And they didn't learn from the fact that there was something called the Abalone Alliance in California that was an anti-nuclear movement. And they had this thing of, like, governing themselves by consensus.
Well, it's certainly, we're running out of time.
Yeah,
and
no, I think
it's certainly true that people in general don't learn enough from history. But it's also true that you never know. I don't know whether or not, I really don't know whether or not the Occupy movement has legs beyond what happened last year. But we shall see. And you'll call us up and tell us again. And you stay tuned to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
From the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio Night for the 2013 Blazers season will be April 17th, the last home game of the regular season. Tickets are limited for this unique opportunity, where a portion of the proceeds will help support your community radio station. More information can be found at kboo.fm/blazers.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, activist, journalist, and author Bill McKibben speaks on the climate cliff. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, on Flashpoints, a report on U.S. meddling in Syria, and President Obama grants the National Security Agency 5 more years to carry out warrantless wiretapping. At 11, on Stage and Studio, guest host S.W. Conser interviews Portland artist Tad Savinar, co-author of the play Talk Radio. KBOO is screening the film Talk Radio this Thursday night at the Clinton Street Theater. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews photographer Christopher Rauschenberg about Museum, his show of recent photographs at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. Thanks, KBOO members, for your ongoing support. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
It does not do any good to talk about this stuff. We've talked about it for 25 years. If anything's going to happen about it, it's because we're going to move like a movement, to do the things that movements do. The only thing we can promise you, the only thing, is that there are, because I've been all over the world looking, and there are millions of people ready to make this fight now, okay? And you will have the honor of standing shoulder to shoulder with them, and we will have the honor.